Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this live edition of Vox Vomitus. Do not adjust your sets. The right host is hawking today because I get to host today. I am your temporary host, Allison Martine Hubbard, because I am guest hosting when Jennifer Ann Gordon herself, your hostess with the mostest, is in the hot seat because we are talking about, yeah, keep that up, the Japanese box. I am so excited, Jennifer, to talk to you about this because we talk about everybody else's writing and we barely get to talk about the stuff you write. And you just had a book come out and we were like, yeah, there was a book. And now we can finally sit and talk about it. I feel like I should do hello, Jennifer, and tell us about yourself. But that's
I know, but everybody, I mean, if somebody's like just tuning in for the first time,
they're like, what?
They're like, what is happening? Our loyal listeners and viewers, I think they know a lot about me. Hi, everyone. but I'm just going to do like a little cliff notes. My name is Jennifer Ann Gordon. I am usually the host and co-host of Vox Vomitus, but today I am in the hot seat. So it was difficult for me to keep my trap shut during the intro.
You're like, shh, this isn't your line.
And I'm like, no, the script is blah, blah, blah. Jennifer Ann Gordon, I am a dark fiction writer from New Hampshire. I did recently have a new release, The Japanese Box and Other Stories. This came out on August 1st. And now we're at the end of September, but it still seems very new to me. So thank you, Allison, you've been so cute for months now. You've just been saying, if we have a week without a guest, can I interview you? And I kept saying, no, nobody's going to want that. And I think people do. So I'm here with my book. I'm here with the actual Japanese box itself that the story is based on.
What's in it?
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you read the story, you'll understand why, like, I'm a little scared to put anything in there.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't. I would say it's a good display piece.
Yes, it usually lives up in my little tower room where I write. I'm also the author of Pretty Ugly.
I should have mine up because I have the other cover, the one that
I
has
almost brought the other cover too. And I am the author of Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent.
And the Hotel Series.
And the Hotel Series.
I had all of yours, but I'm not coordinated, and I would end up dropping all of them. So I have them back on
the shelf. I almost brought all of them down, but I was like walking down four flights of stairs, and I knew for a fact if I had three books and a haunted house and a haunted Japanese box, like the actual box, that I would definitely fall down the stairs because my dog was also following me up and down four flights of stairs.
Yeah.
While I just like got all of my stuff.
Mine are literally right behind me, but if I knock this over, I will never get it back up.
Right.
I will probably break it. So it's barely there. Oh, Regina says, new book, who dis? Who this is Jennifer, and I get to pretend to be the host today. And yes, it was hard to get Jennifer
to
not
say. We are equal co-hosts.
But you always do the opening and the closing, and you usually do the opening, and it was hard for you to not speak, and it was hard for me to not try to introduce this as my science fiction show. Which
I know,
this,
I was like,
this would sit in the speculative box, but I give you the horror stuff. So in many ways, it's like this says it's Vox Vomitus, but it's almost a special edition of To the Moon Allison or Let's Scare Jennifer to Death, but with Allison hosting. So whatever
it's definitely a trifecta of
a Venn diagram.
A Venn diagram, and it's just one circle, and it's just all shaded.
It's this face there, and that's what it looks
face
like.
Without
and
a
it's
face.
Terrifying. And yeah, this cover is this is Dawn Noble.
It is Dawn Noble from Rooster Republic Press. I absolutely adore him. He did the covers for my Hotel series, which of course I don't have next to me. His work is spectacular. And when I saw that image, I just knew.
He makes me want to write scarier things just so I can have a Dawn cover because my stuff.
I have a folder. I have a folder of pre-made Dawn covers that I just purchased. Because
I know you did.
and this was one of them. Yeah, I do have an owl one.
This is better for this cover than the owl would be. But I love that owl cover. I'm like, what would I write for that? I don't know. I want it. It's like the people who buy shoes with an outfit that doesn't go with it or earrings. And then they're like, I'll figure it out later.
I feel like that owl cover, because I've had it now for 3 years
Yeah, I remember.
And
it's
I still don't have any ideas for it. So it might become a tattoo at some point.
Ooh, that would be cool.
I know. It would be painful.
And I'm thinking, I'm like, well, so Paul Tremblay's daughter does tattoos. Do you think she could convert a book?
Oh my gosh. If we could do a whole horror event of like convert this beautiful cover by Don Noble, who is a horror artist and a horror author and a horror publisher, and have this daughter of one of our more famous guests, Paul Tremblay, do a tattoo. Then we just stream that in a very weird live episode of Vox Vomitus.
It's performance art. I don't know how to do that. You went to school for that. I did not. I'm like, I understand what's happening here. But okay, so this is your newest book released. And tell us a little bit about the Japanese box as far as how it came to be. I know some of the story and I know some of that, but not everybody does, partially because you have another project that is out with publishers. And so some people are like, is this the secret project? This is not the secret project. This was never a secret.
This was never a secret. Yeah, this was kind of an accidental project.
Yeah.
very much, because the Japanese Box and Other Stories is a collection of a few short stories and a long poem. These were things I just sort of had on hand. The Japanese Box story itself started in a grief writing class, and it started as a personal essay. And I will just say there is nothing scarier than writing a personal essay. So it got very personal, and I thought, I've got to distance myself from this. I know. Add a ghost. Add
how
weirdness.
Is that? Wait. How is that depersonalizing? This is you we're talking about. That seems still true to life.
I know. And it was pretty true to life. So I will say that story started as a memory of one night that I spent with my dad when he told me about his time in the Korean War. And he had this little box, this Japanese box that I have with me right now, and it had things in it. And he had gotten it when he was on leave before he was a POW and all of these things. So he somehow had sent that like home to his mom or something. So it still existed. So he had it. He gave it to me this one night when I was about 10. So that's where the story started. And then I just imagined, what if the main character, me, put things in this Japanese box, and sometimes they changed, and who is changing them? Yep. And not a spoiler, there was supposed to be a fan in this box, and in the book, my father, or the character playing my father, that like kind of my dad, he said, I don't want to give you this fan because I know you're going to break it or lose it. And Allison asked me before we went live if I knew where the fan was. And I said, nope, I lost it. So he was correct.
And true to life, this was one of my children's fans and they broke it like day of, because we went to, and it's almost time for it again, there's a Japanese fest in the OC and they got this and of course broke it promptly because my children are like little demolition derbies with
well they're kids so. And I was a kid, and I don't remember exactly when I broke and or lost this, but it was probably a long time ago. So yeah, I rode the Japanese box and I was really proud of it, and I sent it to Damon Manx at Last Waltz Publishing, who he has been a guest on our show. Yes. And I was hoping that it could be part of an anthology he was going to maybe put out someday. And he loved the story, but it is quite long, and he was very complimentary, and he was like, this is like kind of too good to be in an anthology kind of buried. Like, it deserves more, because it's so personal.
Because it's a personal thing, and it deserves to be the cornerstone, the title piece. And while it might be awesome in another anthology, it might not get the attention. It wouldn't be the title piece. And I love that this is the title piece for it, even though like there are other pieces that I'm like, that could also be the title piece. And we'll get to them in a minute. But
yeah,
I think that he didn't take it and just say, sure, I'll throw it in with something. And it wouldn't necessarily get the attention that it
deserves. He was, I mean, I remember him responding back to me saying, we have something so special here, but it's not long enough to just stand on its own.
That is true.
And he's like, well, what else do you have for maybe an anthology? And I gave him the story, The Lithium Moon, which I know, Allison, that is your favorite story in this collection. And when I wrote The Lithium Moon a couple years ago, I thought, I'm going to write a collection and it's going to be called The Lithium Moon and Other Stories. So
that didn't happen.
That didn't happen because So I sent that to Damon, and again, it was too long for most Like, because most anthologies are like, you know, 4,000 words, 6,000 at the max.
Well, can we talk a little bit? We'll get to all the things in there, but I remember when you were writing Lithian Moon and you would be sending me things going, it's a werewolf story, except it isn't. But it is. And you were answering the call. And this is what a lot of writers do when they are trying to be part of a larger anthology, is they see a call and then they do their take on the call. And you're like, mine's going to be too weird. Mine's not what they're looking. I know it's not what they're looking for. But maybe.
And I completely blew past their word limit.
Their word count. Yeah. You're like, yeah, but maybe they'll let me get in a couple extra.
I ended up not submitting to that original call.
Like, because right for that.
I blew by the word count by like 5,000 words. It was like, it's not like they could be like, we'll just trim it a little. It would have to be cut in half. Yeah. But then I ended up submitting it to another call that was looking for creature books and monster books or monster stories. And hey, Candace.
We said hi, Candace.
And but it did not get accepted for this monster anthology, and I can understand why, because it's not
it is, but it isn't, and it's the last one in there. And so I love that it's kind of, if Japanese box is like the centerpiece, this one's the end cap, which is to me just as important, because it doesn't figure out, like, you start with something that's violent and scary and gets your motor running, and then we move towards other stuff, and then we have the Japanese box as the centerpiece, which is broken into chapters, as is Lithium Moon. So some of these, you've got all sorts of sizes here, which I personally love as a reader, because it doesn't feel like, oh, they become interchangeable because they're all the same length. They all have the same pacing, and they don't. But I do love that these things that you're like, this, I feel like it's wrong for this, but I'm doing it anyway. Found the home in this book that is out now with your name on it and isn't hiding somewhere. I'm trying to not, it's a beautiful cover,
it's shiny.
So I keep to keep moving it so that I'm not sitting there and having to like, reflect back from my SoCal sun.
There we go. It's really, so I've seen it. I've been lucky enough to see this like in the wild in a bookstore, and like, without a ring light on it, it really does like shimmer and shine.
And I'm like, ring light on it, it blinds you. And then you're like, blinds you. put your blinders on. And okay. Yeah. And Candace says it's gorgeous. Candace, I don't know if you have one or just seen it in person, but it is a beautiful cover.
Candace might have one.
And that is the hard thing when you go for the shinier cover, is it makes it kind of hard to photograph sometimes because it doesn't always cooperate with your light source.
Exactly. I'm like, I know that from that one semester I was a photography major before I switched to like clown college.
I was going to say, was this before or after you were a magician's assistant or went to clown school? Okay. And Candace does that one. We assumed Candace, but we didn't want to be like, Candace, show us yours. And have
I know. Just like shame Candace, and she'll be seriously, like,
putting you on the spot would be just kind of rude.
Now, Candace is a goddess in the horror community, very well known, a wonderful author. She hosts podcasts and blogs, and she is probably one of the biggest cheerleaders in the entire horror community, especially indie horror. And this is why we love her.
Yay, Candace. I'm just looking at the table of contents because I didn't want to botch the name of your first book story in here, which is simulacrum, which is a word that for whatever I can't say. And Candace says, stop. Aw, this is about you. And then sends all the hearts. See, proof. She is the lovely cheerleader.
She is. I know. But, you know,
every community needs people like that, because it is such a hard business. Whether it's like your main thing or a side thing that you're doing, it is just soul wrenching sometimes. And if we don't have people like Candace.
Is it really? I know. You and I talk every day a million times.
I know.
And it's like, you know, and even before we went live, I was like, I think I'm having a nervous breakdown about ellipses.
Fill in the blank. We both have them. And, you know, I got a text this morning from my agent while I was driving that made me want to cry, which is, it was a good cry. It was definitely a good cry, but it was also one of those things where I'm like, this happens while I'm driving. Like, do not react emotionally while driving. Why am I looking at my text while I'm driving? Why?
Because I was going to say, I feel like the problem is
thing right here, and it popped up. And when I see my agent's name, it was like Pavlov, but not just like there's food, but my entire nervous system shuts down.
Well, I mean, I've said this to people. I'm like, I am not great with answering texts in a timely manner most time. But if it's my agent, like when she calls, when she texts, it's like immediate.
Mm-hmm. Well, as it was, because I'm waiting to get something from my agent, I was like, okay, so at 11 o'clock my time, I'm going to be on with Jennifer and she knows you. So she's like, I'm like, okay, so if I don't answer then, she's like, it won't be right now. It'll be later today or maybe tomorrow. I think she probably told me to go get a manicure again. I didn't, you can tell. But again, it's one of those things where we get those emotional reactions and those nervous breakdowns and things. And sometimes it's from something as simple as a great review. And sometimes it's as simple as it clearly
a bad review.
and then you've got to pull the knife out of your back and it's still dripping with all of your life's blood. And that's really fun. Speaking of life's blood, there's a lot of gore or just violence in the very first story, Simulacrum.
Yeah.
I can't say that word. Am I saying it right?
Simulacrum. So I always say it simulacrum.
So you have a, yeah.
But then I've heard people call it, say, simulacrum. And I really don't know which one is correct.
I like
saying simulacrum. I like saying it that way. Yes. Yeah, that is probably, I think I'm more known for like quieter horror.
Yes, this felt the least like your writing that I've ever read. Partially because, first off, the POV is male.
Mm-hmm. And he's not named.
And that feels like you, though. But the POV there is so abrasive. It's very different from yours. So if anyone reads this and they read the first one, they're like, I don't know what to think of that. It's very different than the rest, which is why I kind of like it as like this opening starting
because it gets you going and you're like, what did I just read? And I've heard a lot of I've gotten a lot of great compliments on that story since this came out that people were like, oh, it's my favorite.
Wait, and you had it in you. You're like,
and some people, really understanding that while it's horror, it's also very, very dark comedy, kind of satire. So the people who are responding going, that was hilarious and it was disgusting and I loved it. But then I've had some people go, oh, I didn't find that funny. Like, it just still seemed sad. And I'm like, oh, okay. So then
you're not one of those.
Not one of the stories for you. But yeah, it was really fun to write
that line.
Sociopath and a narcissist.
Yes. I mean, it's very Patrick Bateman. If Patrick Bateman were like low rent, middle, state college kind of feeling.
Yeah. And
like,
that's
not
really kind of, that's kind of what, I jokingly call it a serial killer origin story. like who was the serial killer? Like, who was Patrick Bateman, freshman year of college?
Oh, he went to an Ivy League. Are you kidding?
Yeah, he did. And he did go to a weird, as you said, a low rent state school in the Midwest.
C's get degrees kind of thing. But yeah. I could relate to that and I could visualize a lot of it. Not that I became a serial killer. I didn't. But just it felt very, because we grew up in the same era, I felt that time zone leaping into it, everything.
Right. And I feel like,
it's not modern in that way.
No. And when we think about who we were in our early years of college, late years of high school, and the people we might have dated and known.
Let's not think about those.
I know. So I went into that story just thinking, what if I wrote the worst couple I could possibly imagine going out on a couple
Bonnie
dates?
Bonnie and Clyde, they're worse. Because Bonnie and Clyde at least had panache. These two.
And cool hats. These two should not be together.
No.
But at the same time,
we know
I'm
people who are like that. We all know those couples where, I dated a guy, and I've even written about this, where a roommate of his was just the sweetest guy and he just dated the worst girl. And it was the kind that they'd break up and get back together again.
Yep.
And it wasn't that she was necessarily a bad person, but she just treated him terribly. And all of us are just shaking our head going, why are we doing
what
this
is happening?
Again?
Yeah.
The
sex is really good usually in those situations.
Apparently, but it's not like they tell you that. It's not like they come out going, well, we apologize that we've been horrible humans to one another, but our intercourse is acceptable.
I love that you just used the word intercourse.
I know. I did because they would have to be very formal about it, right?
Yeah.
And Abby says, love dark comedy mixed with horror. And yes, I know. And she has a great sense and she keeps writing darker and darker too. So I feel like we've been terrible influences on her, but she was dark when I met her. So I guess I can't.
Yeah. I was gonna say, Abby's a theater person.
She's a theater person. And she's also one who Abigail, I love you to death, but she will send me partial manuscripts and kill people off and then unkill them in later editions. And she's just like, I decided they didn't need to die. I'm like, I'm still grieving from when they did. So maybe that's the humor is watching me go through that.
Yeah, that's the humor. Just kidding. You're fine. What you don't know is Abby is writing a really long book about slowly torturing another author by giving her a bunch of versions of it. That's a long con.
it's the long con of doing all that. But no, but that comedy with horror, it's just a fine line. And it is funny because there are things that some people are like, oh, that was so funny. And depending on where it strikes you. So recently somebody was asking like, oh, who are some of the horror filmmakers that just are nailing it right now? And I had just watched last weekend the movie Nope. And some people are like, oh, it was so funny. I'm like, I was freaking terrified. I had to stop watching the movie and then go back and finish watching the movie because I just couldn't handle it. And other people are like, but it was funny. And didn't you? I'm like, okay, now that I'm not having a panic attack, I can see how the funny parts are there.
Right.
But like, it's where it finds you in that. So that mix is so balanced and it's going to hit each person a little different by what gets their hackles up and where they just
exactly. shut down. And I will say, they weren't criticisms of Simulacrum, but the people who were like, oh my gosh, who reached out to me specifically to say how sad they thought it was. were all therapists.
They are all giving you referrals right now.
They're like, well, they were just like, you know, narcissism and sociopathy is not really like that's they were a damaged couple and what happened to them? And I'm like, yeah, this was really just about a bad date night.
It was fiction, so I'm okay.
It's fiction.
Thank you, and I appreciate
and I'm always like, well, I mean, just read the Japanese box, and you'll be reaching out to me saying, are you okay?
Right. Well, and as far as reaching out and just having your homework, like, I've been to therapists where they want you to write, like, I had one that actually made me write, like, the most traumatic things that have ever happened to me. And I feel like what stage of grief it is, or is it? Sorry, I'm getting it backwards. What stage of grief is it? Is one of the most beautiful things I've ever read. And part of it is because it isn't a story. You say it's more of a dirge.
Yeah.
It's a poem, but it is melodic in that way. And I feel like that's your list right there. your trauma. It's like, oh, you want that? Oh, it starts on page 65.
If
you want to have my trauma list. So therapist, turn to page 65.
And that actually, that started that, piece started as, again, a personal essay. I got a writing prompt from the amazing Diane Zinna, and she was inspired by, there's an Instagram account called Mother Wart and Rose, who does a lot of like trauma healing posts and writing prompts. So it went from Mother Wart and Rose to Diane Zinna to me to the page. And originally it wasn't a poem. I wrote it as an essay, and then I went back and I just started crossing out every excess word. Like, I just wanted it to be, as you said, like a dirge. I wanted the rhythm of the language. I wanted to see the space between the lines. I just like, and then once I cut all the superfluous stuff out, I realized this is something. And it was, again, very honest. I did not fictionalize that one at all.
You didn't. And as someone, so people might look at this and go, these are oddly specific things, and it's because they're all true. And knowing you, that one was the one that probably hurt the most to read, because I remember when these things happened, or you had talked about them. So some of them happened during the course of our friendship, and others were things that still are with you, because grief never really goes away. It just
changes.
Exactly.
And you learn to
hear, and I'm like, oh,
yeah. Because like grief is just unexpressed love and unexpressed time with somebody or something or an experience. So like it's like such a tribute to people I've loved and lost,
or dogs. Because there's dogs in there too. And we have friends who've recently lost pups, and like the way that they're showing their tribute to their dogs, it's like they touch our hearts so much.
I have cried. I know who you're talking about, and I'm not going to say her name because I don't want people to just like... But a dear friend in the writing community who I think the entire world was in love with her dog.
Yes.
And how she is doing a tribute to this dog. It's for her. It's for her husband. But weirdly, like, it's for us too. I'm like, because I haven't cried over like somebody else's pet loss that I've for a pet I've never met in real life.
Like, I didn't even get to pet that pet.
I know. So.
But it's beautiful. And I love that, including the fact that you took the risk to do something that isn't a short story, that is a different way of communicating. And it's mm-hmm. the kind of poetry that usually resonates with me the most, because A, I'm not a poet, so I'm just going to start by saying that. But when I have oddly done poetry, it's that rhythmic thing, not so much as rhyme, but it's the feel of it to the point where you'd think mm-hmm. there should be a tune here. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yet. Like an underlying drum beat, something yes. like there is a rhythm here. And I feel the same way about poetry. Like that's what I love. Yeah, like bagpipes.
Not bagpipes. I did not say bagpipes for
an accordion.
My dad will get out his accordion and he will serenade you, because my dad used to play the accordion.
I love that. Most tango music has accordion in it.
Yeah, but then it's like the Spanish accordion, and it feels more sexy and not weird out.
Less Pennsylvania Dutch.
Yes, it's very Pennsylvania. It's like, oh my God.
There's a world of difference between the Pennsylvania Dutch accordion for and like I'm in Argentina.
Minutes, yeah, 10 minutes my child was involved, like just super, super obsessed with watching accordions and was watching Weird Al and other people play accordion. I'm like, where did this come from? I'm like, oh, it's my dad's genes. They got in there somehow. I'm like, did you know grandpa played the accordion? Seemed very
let's get him on Zoom.
Yeah, let's get him on. Let's have him play. I don't think he has that anymore, and probably hasn't for like 60 years. But still, maybe it never goes.
Once away. An accordion player, always an accordion player. That's the old saying, isn't it?
I don't think so. But okay. So going through this book, what was like your process for deciding what was going to go in here? And were there things that you wanted to put in but decided not to?
So weirdly, my process of like what is going to go in here started with, again, Damon going, nope, this is too long and too strong. And then Lithia Moon, I gave it to him and he's like, nope, almost as long.
Put them together.
Then he's like, what else do you have? And I'm like, oh, well, I've got this other, you know, this weird serial killer origin story. I have this long grief poem. I also sent him this strange thing that did not end up in the collection. And I'm glad because it was like, I don't want to say too experimental, but I wrote it like a play that has already been performed. So if you write a play, just write a play, it doesn't have stage directions and lighting cues and all that stuff. When you read a play, it does have those things, because those are all taken from the notes of the stage manager for the original production. So okay, anytime it says like
theater person.
Yeah. So like light goes like blah, 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 or like character crosses downstage. Like when you perform a play, the first thing you do when you get it is you cross out everything that's in parentheses.
You do?
Yeah. Because those are the
You're
notes.
You're going to get your own?
Yeah. Because those are just all the notes from the original production.
And they aren't going to necessarily be what your stage production
right.
have and may not have the same
exactly.
thing. We don't even have a rotating stage. What do you mean?
Exactly. Like we're not theater in the round. We don't have a budget.
We don't have a budget. That's valid though. We don't have a budget.
We don't have the budget is usually why you cross everything out. So I wrote a very short play about, I don't really want to give too much of it away.
No, but, because it should, you will tell me later.
Yeah.
But I want that to show up somewhere else then. But I can understand, like the thing about a collection, especially when you've got an anthology by different authors, everybody's kind of coming towards a similar idea from their different points mm-hmm. of view. When you have a single author, there's a harder thing you've got to do, because you've got to show a variety, but still be on
point. Cohesive.
Yeah. Like. And so if one thing is like, this is too different, it might be the perfect thing for another collection down
exactly.
the road, not there. So don't give everything away.
Yeah, I don't. Because it's also, it's very, yeah, it's interesting. But it was so out there.
Well, and Regina wants to know, what do you mean the character doesn't cross the stage in a human hamster ball? We don't have the budget for that human hamster ball.
Regina.
We don't have the budget for a hamster or a hamster ball, like even just one that's like this big. Now, I will say that we do have those at my church, like the ones that are inflatable.
That like a human can go in?
That a human can go into, and that they put like the
I'm always afraid they're going to smell like vomit inside.
No, because it's not, well, okay, it's not those. It's the inflatable ones where their feet are kind of below and they're like in it and they bounce into each other.
Okay.
I don't know why they have them, but they also
then
have
I would think I would be afraid those would smell like pee.
It's all, yeah, I know, and it wouldn't. They're not in there. It's not like the ball pit from Chuck E. Cheese in the 80s. It's fine. And they deflate afterwards, so you could probably wipe it down pretty easily.
Yeah, we could get some good baby wipes.
If your production needs those, I will see what we can do to get the hamster balls or the inflatable.
I mean, it doesn't need that right now, but I might be able to add wires. I can add it in.
You can add it in because it hasn't been released yet. But I had no idea that. I mean, like when I would get choir music, we would sometimes erase where the breath marks would be because it might not be where your director would like you to do that. So, or even how to pronounce certain things, especially if you get stuff in other languages and we're like, are we doing an Excelsis Deo and a Chelsea's Deo? No one can decide, but y'all got to do the same thing. You got to make it the same. But I had no idea about that. And I know when you were talking about creating beautiful, frightening, and silent, you're like, it could be a one-man play. It could be a graphic novel. I still think it should be a graphic novel.
I still think it should be a graphic novel. I also think it should be like an independent black and white film produced by Josh Malerman.
Yeah, he's probably already working on it. Didn't he tell you?
Yeah, no.
Just sounds like he got a wild hair and decided to do that at some point in time. And I mean, you're
because he doesn't sleep.
I don't think he does. I don't ask like what kind of ADD meds he should be on, but I wonder if they keep him up at night. And I mean, I speak this as a mother of a child with ADHD who is like, we're working on having conversations that are cohesive. And then I go, well, if he watches our show, then he's never going to
watch. I was just going to say,
where does he get it from?
How would you teach him that? Well, we have never had a cohesive conversation.
We were talking.
Sorry, I'm like shrieking this at you.
My child was borrowing my breath. And she's like, why is there blonde hair in here? I'm like, I have some blonde hair. And she's like, I guess. And then she was looking at it and going, well, you know, some of it's gray. I'm like, I know. And then she was saying, yeah,
call that blonde.
I know. She's like, that's why you look younger, because you dye your hair. And I'm like, all right. And we were talking about that. And then out of nowhere, Rafferty in the backseat is like, and then did you know Evan Afton on Five Nights at Freddy's? I'm like, what? But it's just, that's just every conversation with him. So I get it. I understand. But back to Josh Malerman, because I had a point. His praise is right on the front of this book. And the fact that you were able to get someone of that stature to read your book, let alone give it praise, is just,
feel like the day I asked him to read The Japanese Box, maybe I had had a cocktail or two.
Or three. You're like, liquid courage. This is tea.
And it might have been like shortly after one of his appearances on our show. It might have been like
still drunk too, because he had like a bottle of bourbon on our show. That might have been a good time to ask.
So, but I did ask him, and of course he's very busy. So it took him a while to obviously get to it. But my neuroses was he read it, hated it so much that he like is going to like block me. He's not going to be on the show anymore. He's going to be, because he's too nice, he's not going to want to say like,
very nice,
this is the worst thing I've ever read. That was just like imposter syndrome. And then one morning he texted me and he was just like, hey, I'm about to start reading it right now. And I
took off running. Here we go.
Yeah. So then I started like literally had like flop sweat. I interrupted my husband while he was working. I'm like, Malerman's reading my book right now.
The vapors.
I need a fainting couch. Luckily, we have one. And then what I didn't expect was him to be like live texting me while he was reading it. So it ended up, I feel like I might have lost 5 pounds that day just in like nervous adrenaline. And sweating. But it was really lovely to hear things like, this makes me want to be a better writer. And I'm like, well, you're my favorite writer. So that is huge.
Yeah, to have
one of my favorite writers
giving you that kind of praise is just ridiculous. And it is funny because, so I'm in certain discords of agented authors on submission, and it is a hellhole of a place to be. Everyone's
gonna say that's a pack of neuroses right there.
It is.
We're there.
Everybody's amazing. Everybody is talented. Everybody is like close from getting their dream to happen.
Because you have to already be that good to get an agent.
Yeah, and that's the starting point, that everybody is there, and then everybody's getting the rejections where they just the editor didn't quite connect or didn't this or didn't that. And so it's a crazy.
Or it goes all the way through acquisitions.
And then it gets one now. And then it's dead. And then no one hears from it again. But so there was a question at some point. People were like, oh, you know, my book is coming out and I'm scared to ask for blurbs. And how do you do it? And some were like, oh, you know, I'll just do it. And I realized in some ways it is harder if you actually know some of these people, because then you're like, there's a relationship there that you're like, am I imposing? Am I asking too much? Versus if you're a new author and the only other authors you really know are in the same boat and our blurbs are worth nothing. So you're reaching out to authors you respect. And if they say no, you just assume, oh, they're too busy. They got other stuff.
They're too busy.
Fine. They didn't even get a chance really to look at it. They aren't open to it right now. But there's not that sense of, what if they don't want to talk to me again?
I know. What if they, and again, that's the imposter syndrome. It's like, oh my gosh, what if they realize I'm not in the same league as them? And I went through the same thing when Pretty Ugly came out, because I, like, this is how I ended up getting my agent, because I like Paula Mounier, love her work. And I was like, could you read my book for a blurb? I also asked Wendy Webb, Sean Cosby. They all said yes.
And you're like,
and I'm like, what? What? You're reading my book? Oh my gosh. Wendy Webb, Sean Cosby, Paula Mounier. Like,
I love you, Wendy.
I love you, Wendy. I love you, Sean. And so, yeah, that's how I ended up getting signed with my agent, because she read my book to blurb it and immediately called me. And she was just like, who is your agent? Why don't you have an agent? Like, what is going on with your career? We have to get on a Zoom. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we really
are. But yeah, and I remember once I was interviewing Sean Cosby for New England Crime Bake. Yes. And we were both gushing about The Turnout by Megan Abbott. And then I was gushing about Sean's work. And he, like, during an interview, was just like, that's how I feel about your writing. Like, you're, and I was just like, and I was literally almost started crying. And I'm like, hold it.
Be professional.
Hold it together.
I'm being, like, professional now.
I know. And but I think I was like, oh, I think I'm going to die. You know?
He's like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Because Sean's such a nice guy. He wouldn't do that if he thought, like, he would wait till after the interview if he would have thought it would thrown you off. I'm sure he just thought,
I went,
you know,
like, completely crazy.
Yeah. Well,
like, for like two solid minutes. I'm just like,
seriously,
in my head going.
there is the neuroses. We joke, there's a thread I'm in of authors, and we're in various stages of moving towards traditional publishing. And it's literally listed as like Mac Daddies with Lexapro milkshakes, because, you know, that's what we need is the Lexapro. But to get that,
I usually do like to ask people like what meds they're on right away. Like,
oh, so what are you on? Oh,
what are you on?
Shake your little bottle.
I will
not
also, I
have drug use. It's
no, but happy, you know, better living through medication sometimes. Be a sipper on for me. Again, to go back to the Japanese box, I also have a beautiful blurb on the back cover by the one, the only Diane Zinna, who is, she's been a teacher, a mentor, a good friend, a guest on our show, the author of The All Night Sun. And she also
has something coming out soon, doesn't she?
She does.
I don't
she
know
has
how soon.
It's fall.
That.
It's fall of 2024. So Diane has a book called "Letting Grief Speak: Writing Portals for Life After Loss," and it is a culmination of many of her writing portals over the last 3 years of her teaching her Grief Writing Sunday classes, of which I have been a part of for quite some time. And Diane and I actually co-taught a class about generational grief together. And humble brag, in that book.
Jen, you cut out like just as you were humble bragging. And I don't know
humble
what
brag.
Happened. Like, I'm still in. So humble brag.
Humble brag. I do have three pieces in Letting Grief Speak, Writing Portals for Life After Loss. There is an amazing table of contents. I know many of these writers. Some of them are newer writers just starting out. Some are, you know, have been doing this a while. There are some names that are so huge, but I am not at liberty to say. And this book will be coming out with Columbia University Press. It'll be coming out in paperback next year and also be released as a textbook for courses at Columbia and other colleges.
Nice. So
it's just
our
crazy.
Like you're going to have Jennifer might be on your syllabus. So how amazing.
I know.
Is that?
God, I wish I didn't use the word blow job in my essays.
Like they're college students. They've either given
they
one,
know what it is.
One or at least know what it is. It's fine. It's totally fine. I mean, I'm still jealous because my seventh grader is getting to read dystopian lit for her regular English class. I mean, it's an honors class, but I'm like, we never got to read recently published things I would have wanted to read anyway. YA
like
stuff.
In seventh grade.
For seventh grade. Like, what?
The only things I remember reading in seventh grade are Arthurian legends, like Once in Future King. I remember reading Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Not that that's bad, but I don't remember.
Is that the one? I don't know if I've read that one. Is that the one where they're eating people?
No. The seagull is, it's literally the POV of a seagull. And it's just about like life, a contemplation of life. It's beautiful. It's a short novel. We had to write poetry based on it. And I wrote some poem. I can't remember it at all. But I was so mortified because I had no friends and was real awkward. Just imagine my hair much shorter and my mother making me get a perm on top of these curls.
Wait,
I don't know.
How do you perm curls? What happens? Each other out and go straight?
No, I had like that like mushroom haircut. So, I mean, why didn't I have friends? Maybe because you have your mushroom haircut.
Well,
but she read my poem.
That was kind of in almost.
Yeah. Like my teacher read the poem out loud to the class. Like, this is what you should be doing. And she wasn't going to name the student who wrote it I sat in my seat and just started crying. So everyone's like,
I guess
I'm so like embarrassed. And
either,
they were like, oh, is that, it's
she's
yours,
really
isn't it?
Touched by it or it was her. Probably it was her.
It was like, because I was just like, oh my gosh.
Crawling under your seat.
Under my seat.
No.
I know people are like, how did you go to school for theater if you started like that? Embarrassed to have, but like writing is so different.
That's
because
different,
it's your soul.
Well, and I was talking to a friend this morning who is they're probably going to be interviewed for something. And she's like, I don't want to do it. And I suggested that her partner give her some cue lines, like things they work out ahead of time, because I know she can do that. There's a lot of us that when you are reciting something and it's not just a dialogue, it doesn't feel as awkward and you can get into the character. So it's like, it's a very different thing. And I know people who have stutters or speech impediments who lose it when they're in character. And I mean, like Nicholas Brendon, that was one of the things helped him get past stuttering is doing a script.
Yep.
Goes away. Don't know why
it,
that
it,
is. Whatever
it really does because
head, it goes away.
So like I'm on this podcast, I have a lisp. Like in real life, I have a lisp. It's a sibilant S. I went to speech therapy as a kid. But I feel like back when I did professional theater, I was enunciating so much and speaking so loudly that you wouldn't hear it. But when I speak quickly with like you or a guest, you can like
hold on, I'm listening for it now.
Yeah. Well, don't listen for
well,
it.
That runs in my family too. Not me, and I won't name who, but there are a couple people in my wider family who have that, and some of them got speech therapy and it went away, and some of them still have it as grown people. But that's fine. You know, but the whole idea of, okay, so you had back in junior high, crawling under, bad hair. I get that. Mm-hmm. I don't really even remember reading much other than a few short stories, and that I feel like my English teacher talked more about her love life than about what we were supposed to be doing. Not like in a bad way, like her husband, who was like way older than her, took her out to a really fancy dinner. Like seventh graders care, but my takeaways were from that. And eighth grade, I don't even remember who I had for eighth grade English.
I have no memory of doing any schoolwork in eighth grade. I will say that. Or seventh grade, really. But my English teacher, the one who read my poem, I don't think I did homework for like a year, but she let me write short stories and turn them in for extra credit. So I ended up doing well, and she was lovely. She knew I was getting bullied very badly, and she would let me eat lunch in her classroom, and I could work on my writing. So I feel like we all have that like one English teacher. Mine's Mrs. Pope. I don't know if she's
still. Mrs. Pope.
You embarrassed me about that poem, but.
But you turned it back around, you know. And that's probably why she didn't say who it was, because she probably knew but she still wanted that to be shared and knew you weren't going to spontaneously share it. Regina says, my brain has now turned that into people eating seagulls. You know, flock of seagulls around the same time, the hair, it all works.
It would be worse if it was seagulls eating people.
But I think that's what I was thinking it was. No, maybe it was people eating seagulls. But I think what I'm thinking of is one of those bad urban legend kind of jokes that we all told each other in upper elementary and junior high, where it's like, oh, the seagulls, they were told it was seagulls and the sailors were eating it. And then they got back and ordered
it was people.
It was people.
It was people all along. This is why I'm a vegetarian.
Like yeah, you're like, this is why I don't eat meat. Like, I'm not doing it. Which is lovely when we have guests. We're like, oh, I'm going to send you an ARC and deli meat. Like, why? Why, Ed? Don't send us deli meat.
We don't know. Oh, Ed Amar.
we love when people are like, thank you. And we would love to give you this cool thing. But deli meat doesn't travel. I'm just going to say it. It is not affordable.
You could do those like pepperoni logs, but I don't want one.
Yeah, but I'll take Jennifer's if it's all meat.
I would definitely like spoil my dog with it.
It's true. It's like, it was for me. My dog loved it. Thank you.
Well, I'll say Vince Laguna sent us both hot dog fingers from Everything Everywhere All at Once and something else from that movie. And
it's
not a candle, a traditional candle shape.
No, it isn't.
I put on my hot dog fingers and I just like, I like tickled my dog with them and like pat him with it. And he goes absolutely crazy. And I keep wanting to film it. Oh yeah.
But it doesn't smell like meat. Thankfully it smells just
like latex.
I was gonna say it smells like household rubber gloves. So yeah. If you really want to awkwardly do dishes.
I know. I was going to do that too. And then I'm like, no, these are probably going to be worth something someday.
Like we need to hold on to these in our
collection. That's the collector in me.
Exactly. Well, okay. So we are coming up on 46 minutes and literally could talk all day because we do. But what I wanted to get to was the fact that, so next week we have an author on, and I feel like it's a good segment from your book to this one, because this is one of those things where the book just shows up in the mail and I'm like, Jennifer, what is this book and why is it? And she said, oh, it's like this. And I look into it, I'm like, one of the parents dies. She's like, yeah. And I'm going, why did you give this to me? She's like, but that's why I picked it.
I know. Caitlin Hamilton Summey, I love working with her. She's a great publicist. She's also a beautiful author.
We do love
her. She was very sweet. And when she reached out to me, she was like, you're going to love this book. She's like, I love this book. You're going to love this book. And I'm like, sounds sad.
It does sound sad.
But it also sounds beautiful. So like
the cover is beautiful. So I'm hoping that's
pocket full of posies, Thomas Reed. So we're excited to dive into this. It is, you know, I think it's probably lit fic.
Probably
lit fic. I'm like, I don't have my glasses, but I mean,
I can't see that part.
I've read the press release a million times and I was like, I do want to read that, but it might be a tearjerker.
Exactly. And I'm like, why are you doing this to me? Why are you jerking my emotions like
yeah,
this?
Yeah, to be mean.
To be mean. However, most of the books we read, if they're scary or whatever, they're generally not tearjerkers. I don't feel like we read a lot of intentionally sad, emotional books. So it is a good way to keep us well-rounded and rather than like every week's a thriller or
every week is a murder book.
Every week someone dies. And see, I think someone still dies, but it's a natural plot. So that's probably fine. But I feel like that's a good transition into it. But I just laughed at them. Like, of course, the one who writes grief writing is going, let's read this. And I'm like, why are you doing this to me? I haven't even opened it. So it's not like I have anything against the book. I'm just
it's going to be great.
It's not the kind of book I would pick up. But that's one thing I would just encourage people. And I'm in a couple different like groups and sometimes book clubs. And the number one comment I get when you don't have a real focus group is, I love it when I get pushed outside of my comfort zone and find a book I never would have picked up otherwise and absolutely fall in love with it. Because there's a reason we have comfort zones. There's nothing wrong with having a comfort zone. But if you never leave the comfort zone.
If you never leave it, you're missing out on so many amazing books.
Absolutely.
Because, like, you know me, like, I love my horror, thriller, crime, mystery. I love a good tearjerker. I love lit fic. I love like upmarket women's fiction. I always said, like, I don't like romance. I don't like books that are like fun and funny. And then I read your book, Dibs, and I'm like, well, this is fun and funny and a romance, and I loved it. And since then, I'm still not a huge romance fan.
And you don't have to be.
But when you recommend something.
And but that's it. I know what you
know
like
me.
And I think that helps. And I don't know. My sister should be working right now and should
but
not
it's her birthday.
Be watching this live. It is her birthday, and she may have gotten a care package a care package from Amazon, but like ordered by me that includes this.
What?
And also Josh Malerman's Spin a Black Yarn, because I know
so
what
good.
She likes. And also that first story in there, I still think was inspired by her, and it's kind of payback. But I'm just like, Dana, this one's for you. So she won't watch this until after she's opened it. So I'm not spoiling her.
Story. Yeah. Like her birthday gift where she's like, oh, thanks.
Yeah,
I was looking forward to that.
No, don't. But I know enough about what she generally likes to read and stuff. So I feel like recommendations matter more than things like Goodreads reviews, is knowing mm-hmm. that person who gets what you like to read and gets your vibe. And sometimes they'll be off, but usually they're the ones that you can turn to and go, well, I like this.
Well, I like it. I know I've said that to you a million times where I'm like,
well, I like it. Well, and I'm honest with you when I'm like, this is not going to be your thing. And those are the ones that I put on my show and I don't make you read.
And then sometimes I watch your show and I'm just like, well, that sounds good. I'm going to buy that book. And I'm like,
you're like, no, I'm not.
And then I'm like, well, it's good, but it's not my jam.
And there are things that you've had on where I'm going, there is no way I could read that without, nope, right out of it. So
no,
it's like,
I know. I think I literally know which book you're talking about.
Oh, Amanda, you say
Amanda!
Your dad gets us a book every year for Christmas. Amanda, I hope your dad picks out good books and he knows what each of you like to read. And that's just an awesome thing. I think books should be big Christmas gifts, because it's like, yeah, you could go to the library and get it or Kindle, but having a physical book is like, there's nothing better. Also, they're really easy to wrap. That's one of my favorite things about gifting
books.
That is
my favorite.
I'm a lousy wrapper. Yep. I don't mean like that kind of wrapper. I cannot wrap. My mother-in-law is like the world's best wrapper, and I always look like a five-year-old tried and got their hands stuck to scotch tape. So.
Well, now I know, like, I'm going to buy Amanda a book for Christmas this year that I think she's going to like. So Amanda is one of my in real life good friends.
A real person. And just make sure you don't get her the same book her dad did, because that would be so embarrassing.
I feel like we probably have different tastes.
We probably have different tastes. And it's funny, because I've gotten books from my dad too, and I know what he likes to read, because I used to steal all his books, because my parents would have like all the paperbacks up there, and I would be like, I need something to read, and go through, and most of his books, I'm like, I'm not reading that. No. It was more likely to be one of my mom's, but a few of my dad's, there are places where our interests cross over. Like James Rollins is the kind of author both of us enjoy.
Yeah.
But he's like your Tom Clancy kind of. And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
That's not really where I'm happy reading.
This is where like coffee table books are always a lovely gift, because also.
You
like,
have one of those.
Oh, I do. I always forget.
Did you forget?
I literally forget most of the time. I'm like, oh, yeah, I have a book. It's called Victoriana. It's a coffee table book of art that.
Yes. Because it's one of those things where it's beautiful and people don't actually have to read necessarily to appreciate it.
There's no words, just the titles of the pieces.
Fantastic. And that's good.
Yeah.
So, Jennifer, thank you for hanging out with me.
Thank you for hanging out with me.
This was an hour.
I know. This was really fun. I mean, I love our shows that it's just us. But it was like very selfishly, I loved being asked questions because I'm an only child.
Book. And honestly,
the actual Japanese box.
And the actual Japanese box that no longer contains a fan. But I feel like it's one
or
of
razor blades.
And I feel like I have seen you interviewed on other shows, and I love hearing you talk to other people about it. But I'm always like the one in the background going, but I have a question. And of course, you know, they can't necessarily see my question because I'm online and I'm not the one in the studio. So it's selfish for me to get to be like, but now I have questions and you have to answer my questions.
I know. And now like, I'm just like, oh God, we should every once in a while just do like a backlist episode where I get to like do dibs and interview you.
Can I be drunk for that?
Yeah.
Okay, but Regina asked another valuable question. Why is there meat that is called loaf? These are the questions that frighten me most. No, olive loaf, pimento loaf. ham and cheese loaf. I don't know. I used to really like that, where it had like the little pieces of cheese in it. There were disgusting things that I really liked that I really worry about. My
pimento loaf.
Sandwich spread. They don't make it anymore, but it was like this kind of meat and relish spread, and I really liked it. And
I haven't had. I haven't.
You don't. You shouldn't want that.
No, it's been 24 years now.
It's probably bad. You just forget all of those things. And I'm looking forward to the future where they make realistic tasting meats that really do taste just like meat, and I don't have to ever eat animals again. But as it is, it's like I'm trying to cut down on it. But anything with loaf in it, I'm good with leaving it behind. Oh, except meatloaf. I like meatloaf. It's good. There's a lot of brown sugar on it. I digress. We're not getting into
wine. I know, Mike. I have nothing more to add to this.
You're like, no meatloaf, Allison! There are no meatloaf references. Is there any raw meat in this one? That's a different book that has the raw meat references, right?
No, that's pretty ugly.
I'm like, I don't think there was a raw meat reference in, but it's been at least a month since I read this, so maybe I missed one or two.
I don't think there's any raw meat.
Thank you.
But I don't think so. I'm like, at the very most, there would have been like maybe macaroni and cheese with cut up hot dogs in it. But I don't think I think that got cut from Japanese box.
I hope it wasn't in the Japanese box, because gross.
No.
And it's like a velvet inside of it.
I know. I was just going to be like, no, Allison, it's velvet.
And Lori says, love you, ladies. And Lori, we love you too. And with
love
that,
you, Lori.
Otherwise, I will just keep talking to Jennifer and it will.
And I've got to take my dog for a.
You got to walk. Eventually, I have to remove my children from their various schools. Today is like pick up everybody at different times today. Today, I am chauffeur woman. Jennifer, you were amazing. Next week, if you are watching this live, thank you. If you're watching this on the replay, please go to the YouTube channel and subscribe and like, because then other people will find this. Because right now we're like nowhere on YouTube because we don't have enough people following us. And I know we're never going to be as big as MatPat, and that's okay.
I have no idea who that is.
That's okay. My children are, I think they think he's one of their parents at this point. I would love it if more people, though, who watch it this way, just at least subscribe on there, even if they watch it on some other thing. That's totally fine. Thank you, everybody. And we will see you next week with Pocketful of Posies. The whole thing is Pocketful of Posies. It doesn't say ashes, ashes. We all fall down.
No ashes, ashes. Nope. Pocketful of Posies, Thomas Reed.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.